In 2024, the dad bod will make its return. At least I hope so.
I think it already has made its return. Welcome to Growing a Fruitful Brand, where we discuss how to create and grow a brand that makes the world a better place for you, your customers, and your employees. I'm Ben Luters, founder and art director of Fruitful Design and Strategy, and this is my business partner and brand strategist, Raj Lula. Today, we are recapping the predictions that we made for 2023 at the beginning of the year. We're going to take a look at some of the stuff that we may have missed, and also make some fresh predictions for 2024. So, Raj, what did we predict?
I mean, we were 100% right about everything, right. So there's no point in even... No. Yeah, so we operated off of 4 P's last year.
That's right.
We said that things would be personal, that partnerships would feature heavily, that political activity would factor in the new year, and that it would require persistence to get out there in the world. So
that was a nice 4-point sermon.
Yeah, no, yep. We did quite well for a small town church. So let's start with personal. We talked about in-person events returning and, the return to office trend, personal mm-hmm. marketing, those types of things. And I would say overall, we got this one pretty right.
Yeah, absolutely. We even predicted that we would do some in-person events, and we did. We had a big 10-year party. We had we even opened up our event for like a tech event that someone else threw and stuff like that. There just seemed to be a lot more of that.
Yeah. Yeah. And business travel seemed to pick up quite a bit more this year. I don't know how it was for everybody else, but I've flown more this fall than I have in the last 4 years.
Yeah, I've been on some, it's obvious, a lot of planes lately.
Yeah. Yep. And so, and honestly, people are, I think, just getting more joy, more satisfaction out of, can we meet in person? Like,
right.
The fact that, I wanted to not be on as many Zoom calls, but our clients were like, yes, we'd love for you to fly out here. And, and so that's something that, for a while people were like, Zoom's good enough. We save the hotel cost, save the airfare. But mm-hmm. I think people are really just getting that there's something different about in person. So I'm going to give us a gold star on that one. Personal.
Yeah, I think personal. Yeah.
We did pretty well on.
What about partnerships?
Yeah. So partnerships, we were talking about, working with other organizations. We were hoping to put on an event with Hardy Coffee for small business owners this year. That's still in the works. It's still something that Autumn and we are very interested in. Mm-hmm. But I think one thing that we kind of just didn't anticipate is how difficult it is to kind of get things rolling post pandemic, all of the struggles that everybody has gone through these few years. It's been hard, to find the time to sit down and plan how we want things to be. And, what does people's attention look like right now? And
especially with a lot of the economic uncertainty and other things that we'll get into in a minute, like, it's just, it can be so hard to start additional things when you're, dealing with other things.
Yeah, when you're having to react to other things.
Exactly.
But that said, though, I mean, our 10th anniversary event this year was in partnership with StoryBrand that, JJ flew up here and that was a great episode if you haven't gotten a chance to listen to it. He talks about, kind of the next 10 years, so even broader predictions than we're doing here. So I would say that some partnership work did happen. I think even flying out to different places has also been just, people are more interested in connecting. So I think we're kind of halfway right on this.
Well, and I would say too, one thing, obviously the world is bigger than just us. Even if it didn't pan out the way that we wanted to, I think I saw a lot of other partnerships as well too. I saw a lot of other, companies working together that I hadn't seen before. And even in conversations with some of our clients, some of the people that they're working with. So I don't know. I think we are kind of all kind of we're getting the sense that we are kind of in this together and seeing each other as more collaborators than competition in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And I even think about how we might have mentioned on a podcast before, but we sat down with, some competitive friends of ours and got some great business advice over coffee. And it felt very collaborative, and they really actually helped us out a lot.
And that was only one of several of those types of conversations that I had this year. And there were times where we had the occasion to, give back to other people as well. When, one of my most interesting phone calls of the year was, a business was kind of slow for us at one point. Called our friend Tyler, who was running an agency, and he said, hey, you're like the 13th or 14th call I've gotten like this. And so...
Doesn't that feel good to hear? Even though that's sad. Yep. It's also like, okay, I'm not alone. I'm not crazy. People are going through this too.
And so I do think that people banded together, but maybe not in a way that I thought was going to happen.
Yeah. What about political? Did it get as political and just crazy and hot button as we maybe thought it did?
It didn't. I mean, at least not in the waters that I swim in.
Is that because we all got off Twitter?
I mean, it certainly could be. And that'll be something we talk about.
We'll get into that
in a second here. But I think that there's just fatigue around politics. Yeah. And I maybe under-anticipated that last year. I thought that people would be kind of more easily drawn back into those waters. And you know, we were talking before we started recording, but Joe Biden promised us a boring presidency.
Mm. He's delivered on that promise.
And I think to his credit, I mean, regardless of what you think of politics at all, or, you know, what are your personal politics are.
Raj is just like, what is his stance on boredom?
But I really enjoyed not thinking about it, not having to have conversations in person about, oh, do you hear the latest thing so-and-so said? And like I've really enjoyed that. It feels a little bit more like we've returned to pre-pandemic life, like a little more just normal. Let's have our lives. Let's go to our churches or schools or whatever and just do our thing.
We'll see if this. Yeah, we'll get into next year's predictions. We'll see if it stays this way. But I definitely agree that it didn't pan out exactly the way that we were kind of fearing. Where, you know, I think one of the things that we said on the predictions episode was, hey, start getting your message out there early in the year, because by the time this time of the year comes around, it's going to be kind of a madhouse and good luck getting heard on social media. And it's just like, at least again, in our circles and my circles, I'm not seeing. I think even my most political of family and friends are just kind of like over it, kind of to some degree, which is like a really interesting place to be as a country.
Yeah.
And if you're in another country and you're listening to this, I'm sure politics are great where you are, but it's been kind of...
And thank you for listening in other countries.
Exactly.
We'd love to visit you.
Yes.
But I mean, to that point, you know, it's like Republican debates have gone on, but part of it's because...
Have you watched them?
No.
Me neither.
Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of
thing. I used to love watching debates.
Yeah. Now, part of it's because the front runner is not participating. And so that makes them less high profile. But I think it's also the fact that there's not two sets of debates going on right now, because there's already a Democratic nominee.
That's right. So 2024, will be interesting.
It's just a little quieter than 2016, 2020 altogether.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so politics, maybe a little bit different than we thought.
I think we're wrong, and I could not be happy to be more wrong on something.
That's a good one. That was what I felt a little bit of angst about when we were sharing about it. So it's like, hey, that actually turned out better. What about the persistence part?
I think we probably got this one right in spades. Yeah. This was, I don't know about you, whoever's listening, but this was a tough year.
Especially the first part of the year, I feel like.
Yeah. And it has required a lot of persistence to stay in business, especially if you own your own business this year. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about a little bit of what we missed here in a moment. But the economic conditions that made this year interesting and difficult had a lot of reverberations for everybody. Yeah. And there was, fatigue and burnout. And I know that I walked into this year hoping that this was the year that we're finally post-pandemic, that everything is finally normal. And it did not work out that way. It was quite the opposite.
2023, we're going to look back on this year, I think.
Yeah.
You know, this is like the year that tried a lot of, and again, it's like we just said with Tyler's comment, like it's not just us. I mean, including Tyler's agency, went through a lot, especially a lot of agency friends. And it really has been challenging. And so, persistence has been a big thing. And, I think part of that persistence comment again was like, you know, really being persistent right at the start of the year, because we were, uncertain economy and stuff like that. And that couldn't have been better advice. You know, it really was, especially for that first half of the year. I feel like a lot of people were kind of like waiting for a shoe to drop or kind of pointing at one another, the Spider-Man meme.
Yeah.
And it just seemed like kind of the doldrums in a lot of ways when it from a sales perspective and stuff like that.
Yeah. You know, there's this old quote about democracy that I love to, I love to adapt for owning a business.
This is political, Raj.
No, not at all.
Okay.
You know, where, the quote is democracy is the worst way to govern except for everything else.
Yes, I've heard that.
And,
yep.
And I feel that way about owning a business sometimes where it's owning a business is the worst way to make a living except for everything else.
That's so good.
and you know, so it's like we love doing what we do. We love owning a business. And there are times where it is heart-wrenching. And
absolutely.
And this year was definitely it was both. In fact,
hey, it's glad to have each other in the thick of it.
It totally
though, right?
is. Yeah.
That makes it much more palatable.
I've actually several times described this year as the Tale of Two Cities years, you know, the mm-hmm. best of times, the worst of times. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's like we celebrated 10 years and had some of our worst quarters ever, you know, and
absolutely.
And, you know, had to make really hard decisions. And you know, it has been the best and the worst of what we've experienced so far.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I was just reflecting last night with my wife on personal things. There's been a lot of like personal turmoil, kind of in our world. And, but we've had each other to go through it as well. And, and there's something about like, you know, this is the year that kind of makes or breaks you. And I've been thankful that it seems like it's really made us, and some of those personal things kind of been making, you know, our family stronger as well. And so, yeah, it can, the things that don't, what do they say? The things that don't kill you make you stronger. So that's how I'm feeling at the end of 2023, for
which
sure.
Which has not been my experience, but because sometimes the things that don't kill
you are so strong,
do
Raj.
In fact hobble you for life, but it's okay. All right. So let's talk about what we missed in 2023.
Which was nothing.
Completely correct in all our predictions. Now, so the one big thing that we didn't talk about last year in our predictions episode, and there's good reason for it, but we didn't talk about AI. And that's because the robots were threatening us. No.
We wanted to. What you couldn't see is the robots off screen.
We did talk about it, and then it was cut from the episode by the robots.
They took it out of our teleprompter.
There are a couple of reasons why we didn't mention it last year. First of all, ChatGPT kind of officially launched into the world in November of last year, November 30th of mm-hmm. last year. And so we recorded probably a week or two after that, our predictions right. episode. And so, yes, it was on its way to becoming the fastest to that point app to reach 100 million mm-hmm. users. It reached in about 2 months, but it wasn't really until kind of end of January that we saw that it was really, really taking off. Another reason why we didn't mention it was because I personally was really fatigued by the NFT and crypto hype.
Oh my gosh.
To me, it just felt like, wow, do we never learn? You know, it's like new technology where we're going to make $1 million, you know? And it's just like, it was so boring to me in terms of like, yeah. And
you like boredom in a president, but
yeah, not in hype though.
But were you into the Bored Ape Yacht Club NFT project?
I saw somebody wearing that shirt the other day, and I was like, I don't think that ages as well as you think it did.
but I feel old saying that.
Oh yeah. So I thought that you know that the hype would cool down as the year progressed, and you know, we'll talk in our 2024 predictions what I think is going to happen there, but it kind of had all the markings of the crypto hype, but it seems to be quite a bit more real. Quite a bit more substantial. And
we did record two episodes right after this on AI. So go back and listen to those. I think it's episode 19 and 20. Yeah.
Even those might be a little long.
Yeah, they
the
would be
at
dated
this point,
too. But, yeah.
Okay. So one of the things that we did miss was politics, which we did mention. However, you know, a former president getting arrested a couple of times and being on multiple trials.
Did that
trials.
Really happen?
Yes.
Even when you said that, I'm like, I forgot about that. Like, that's how fatigued we are at this point. It's like nothing surprises us anymore. It's
totally.
Like, okay, cool. Is he still in prison? What's going on?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, like having a former president like get on, you know, social media or television and slaughter a live animal in front of the entire United States, I think would not actually surprise us at this point.
They're supposed to pardon the turkey, but apparently.
I mean, seriously, but yeah. And so, but it's worth mentioning there were some things that we didn't anticipate, both those kinds of things happening that are unprecedented and no one really caring that much. That's been interesting. Part of that, I think, is because of something else that we didn't really fully judge the gravity of, which was the decline of Twitter and X in relevance, at least. It's only down about 4% in daily active users, but it has become much less of the public conversation.
Well, and I think too, Raj, you know, think about the timing of our predictions episode, kind of similar to the AI thing. It's like, you know, Elon Musk was, you know, had acquired Twitter at that point, right?
Yeah, October 27th is when last year is when the deal went through.
Yeah, so the deal had just gone through. But at that point, it wasn't clear whether Twitter was going to kind of implode or tons of people would leave. It's like, oh, Elon Musk, one of the, you know, most successful business people of all time, who has all these cool things and like helps NASA go to space and all, like he's taken over Twitter. Maybe this thing's going to be even better. But then like, with the kind of overnight rebrand to X.com and all this other stuff that happened later, it just has turned into, and then of course, when did Threads come out? Like there's been so much more development since then. So yeah, we didn't really see that coming quite the same way. I think if anything, if I could put my mind back to where I was this time last year, I was probably more hopeful for Twitter than anything personally.
Right.
It's like, oh, maybe this will be the thing that kind of helps. You know, because I mean, Elon had some, regardless of what you think about Elon, I just finished listening to that Walter Isaacson book about him, a complicated character. But I think he did have some good intentions going into it, as I think most people try to. I think it has just turned into much more of a complicated issue than he ever even dreamed.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And I think that is just such a great example of the fact that. We see all these business books that talk about the right way to do things, and somebody who I can't remember who I was talking to lately, but somebody was saying all those books might as well just be titled Survivorship Bias. You know, it's like, this is what got me here,
right?
But it's not necessarily the right way, and so it's been really interesting to see an incredibly successful person be unsuccessful at something. Because it should, for all of us, especially anybody who's had a rough year, should drill into us that oftentimes the people who write these books, it's not because they discovered some secret or that they're a harder worker or more visionary than you necessarily. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of luck and a lot of timing baked into every outsized success story.
Yeah.
There's a reason why most businesses do not have breakout success. There's a reason why even like books and movies that, you know, you have these studios that and these publishing houses that it's their entire job to make the hits. Mm-hmm. And they don't even really know for sure which ones are going to be hits.
Oh, yeah. It's crazy. Well, and that's actually one of the things that's so interesting for those who've listened to Walter Isaacson's book on Elon Musk is like, how many times Tesla just absolutely almost ceased existing? How many times SpaceX almost completely failed? And how people on the team were having to like mortgage their homes? And like, you know, you just think of this guy as like just uber wealthy and everything just kind of falls into his lap. It's like, it's not, I mean, so much of it was tied up in his businesses and stuff like that. And like, you know, we know this side of the story. It's like, oh yeah, it all kind of seemed like it worked out for him. But like, there are so many times where, you know, everything he was doing almost just ended in absolute disaster. So that's what's so fascinating about that.
Yeah.
And now Twitter seems to be kind of a disaster. So,
yeah,
you know, one didn't work out.
I want to talk about a couple more issues in there too, because there's such a multifaceted thing, even though it's funny because we're talking about how irrelevant it is, but the things that made it less relevant are really relevant. So one of those things I would say is TikTok. You know, the TikTok and Reels on Instagram are the new tweet in some ways. It's that if you're going to express a short thought, people, you know, and a lot of times would rather consume that in video. And especially if it's done creatively and, you know, is a little more addictive and shareable and all of that. And so I think that we might have seen this kind of cannibalization of Twitter anyway. But now you have people, you know, like I know people have been sharing a lot of short form content about the Israel Gaza situation. And they've been doing it more on video rather than before. I think it would have been, all right, I'm going to go to Twitter and just like, completely overload the feed with new stories about this, all this. And I think people kind of moved on from the platform for that particular need. And they're getting a lot more of the educational, political, current events content in other places. And that part of that's because of Musk. And, you know, there have been high profile organizations like NPR, PBS, the Canadian Broadcasting Corp, CBS News for a while, I think, BBC, perhaps. You know, there's several of these high profile news orgs that have left or at least paused their activity on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And so making it less of the town hall, less of the space where we all go for that information,
right?
It has also, you know, kind of decreased the relevance of that and increased the relevance of other platforms.
Absolutely.
In addition to that, the one thing I did not see coming at all this year was the launch of Threads. And now I think it was brilliant on
what date was that?
Adam Mosseri's. I would have to double check, but Adam Mosseri and Mark Zuckerberg, you know, launched Threads
July 5th.
Yeah, middle of this year, so July 5th, and it. So we just talked about ChatGPT being the fastest app to get to 100 million at 2 months, and then Threads 6 months later, 7 months later, turned around and got to 100 million users in 5 days.
Because they cheated.
They did cheat. I also think that it was brilliant.
It was brilliant. I mean, yeah, like they had all these accounts. They had all these
billion users on Instagram.
It's like, hey, if at the click of a button, you can have a Threads account too. Yes. You know, doesn't mean everyone's actively using it.
No, in fact, it's quite a bit smaller. It's about 10 million daily active users. So, you know, they've lost about 90%. But at the same time, you know, at least from what they're saying, this was highly expected. They knew there was going to be a huge look-in audience, and then it was going to drop off quite a bit and then figure out what it is, and then it will grow more sustainably from there. And, you know, one thing to talk about there is, you know, I have a Twitter account still, though I may not by the time this comes out or later in the year, because it's becoming less and less hospitable to be over.
When was
there.
The last time you X'd? Or tweeted.
I think I did one. I did one a couple of weeks ago because I realized I hadn't talked about my launching the book that I'm launching at all.
Okay. Yeah.
And so I tweeted once, pinned it, and then I just jetted out of there again because I'm not all that interested in anything that's happening over there.
Yeah.
And whereas Threads, on the other hand, part of the other reason it's so surprising is because everybody who goes on it tends to say the same things. Like, it feels nice over there.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's funny. Like, if you just open up the Twitter app, and then you go open up the Threads app, and just kind of compare the vibe. At least for me, you know, I mean, it kind of obviously depends on what you follow and the algorithm and all this stuff. But for me, it's like one is kind of a crazy cesspool of hot button stuff, and views, and then the other one, Threads, is just like much more, at least in my experience, just fun to hang out, and everything seems a lot more calm and you know, tailored to what your likes and stuff.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
I am so curious technologically how this is happening, but I'm not surprised necessarily.
Is it just because there's so many less people using it or something?
No, I definitely do not think that that's true, because if you go looking for it, there is a lot of political content on Threads.
Okay.
In fact, there are some people I'll choose not to follow based on we have common interests, but most of what they talk about is politics. But the thing that's really different is that Threads, it seems to be a lot better at putting content in your feed that's a mixture of people that you follow and a mixture of stuff that you are interested in.
And they know that because of your activity on Instagram and Facebook?
See, I don't know. That's part of where I technologically
I kind of get know. Like, you know, for example, I like, you know, like and follow a lot of, you know, watch related stuff on Instagram. And then as soon as I got on Threads, it's like all kinds of that I don't follow, but like all kinds of like just interesting watch content and reviews and stuff like that. So like they know what I like.
But I think that the bigger deal here is, do you remember that study that Facebook did many, many years ago where they found that they could actually raise or lower someone's level of happiness based off of the content that was put in the feed? Mm-hmm. And it was super controversial at the time because we're like, hey, we don't know how we feel about tech companies making us depressed for an experiment. And
we're just a bunch of guinea pigs.
Especially not telling us about it. And so what I think has happened, and there's no way for us to prove this, but what I think has happened is that they've taken research like that and said, this is going to be the happy platform. You know, that all of the, you know, Facebook and Twitter have spent a lot more time optimizing for engagement, and it's proven that outrage causes way more engagement than things that are pleasant.
Yeah,
but it also ends up being cesspools. It ends up being places that people hate. And so even though Facebook has 2 billion daily active users, it does not have very much love from people.
Yeah.
And so I think that they're taking a gamble on saying, hey, this is going to be the happy platform, and we're going to figure out how to build something that people actually like. Now, will they Zuckerberg it and fill it full of ads? And let's just pick a fight with a billionaire.
Suck it all up. Yeah,
will they Zuckerberg it and fill it with ads, and then start adding outrage content to drive time on site and all that kind of stuff? Maybe. What I would like to see instead is that I know at some point they're going to have to probably adopt ads, or they're going to have to sell our data so bad that, it's going to become horrible. But what I'd like to see instead is a paid option that's $5 a month of no ads. And it's like, hey, we're totally fine with you making money. Like, that's fine. Just provide a thing that we can keep good.
Yeah, I want my happy.
Yeah, and
I will pay $5 for happiness.
And so I'll be interested. That's kind of my out. It's probably not going to happen in 2024, but that's kind of my out there prediction a little bit, is that I think that if they're smart, that's the approach that they'll take. And I honestly think that that's the approach that Scott Galloway talked about. That's what Twitter should have done, is that Elon should have come in and said, hey, you don't want ads? Great. Here's a paid option. And he did introduce a paid option, but it was for verification and that kind of stuff. Right, and that ended up making a lot of their higher profile users mad. And
It's backfired, obviously.
Yeah.
All right. What else did we miss? Because we got to get into our 2024 predictions. Yep. People are on the edge of their seats.
Yep. We missed Barbenheimer. That was kind of a...
How could we have known?
I mean, truly. But, one of the reasons I think that is so relevant is because it shows kind of the two moods of the country, I think. You have Barbie, which is a fairly light mood to watch, even though it's...
Although dealing with very serious things.
Yeah, exactly.
Probably similar to Oppenheimer.
It's very existential in, dealing with gender issues and those kinds of things. But it was a lot happier of a watch than Oppenheimer.
Sure, just visually. Yeah.
Oppenheimer, on the other hand... Very, very heavy. They both come out the same week, and people, there were a lot of people who did both in the same day, or I did both in the same weekend. And personally, I was just thrilled to have two great movies come out in a short period of time. Mm-hmm. We've been lacking on great cinema content, getting us back to the movie theaters. I was thrilled to have Ballad of Songbird and Snakes from the Hunger Games trilogy come out recently. And I've loved getting back to the theater this year. Again, that kind of goes back to the
in-person thing. You're such a theater buff.
Oh, I love it.
I am too, but you especially, it's very special.
Love to see a movie in a theater. But the Barbenheimer thing kind of took the world by storm for a little bit. And that Billie Eilish song from Barbie is still all over the place. And it is a beautiful song. Mm-hmm. Very sad, but it's beautiful. And I think part of the reason Oppenheimer took off was because in the conversation of AI and these tech giants having so much power, it was a well-timed movie, in addition to being well-executed, well-written, everything. So didn't see that one coming, but was glad to have it in the world.
Also, an economic slump.
Yeah, that was less pleasant to experience. At the end of the year last year, the Fed was raising rates and, kind of soaking up a lot of the money that had been injected into the economy from the relief programs during COVID. And it's like we knew intellectually that that's what they were doing and that's what was going to happen. But I think not all of us really had an understanding of when that hits Main Street. It's like stuff that happens on Capitol Hill and in on Wall Street. It's like, okay, but how does that really affect us? Because there's stuff that people talk about all the time of,
oh yeah. Sometimes it could take years before, or sometimes you never really feel it. It's like, I thought this was going to be a lot harder, but it didn't touch me.
Yeah.
Maybe it hurt someone else, but not me.
Yeah. And I remember, back in the mid 2000s and, after 9/11 and the Iraq and Afghanistan war started, and gas prices were going crazy and kind of all those things. I remember sort of really understanding, it was like, okay, if gas costs a lot of money, it costs a lot of money for things to get to the store. Things that get right. to the store, they get expensive and all that. But even then, it didn't have the economic impact that I would have thought. You know, I think it maybe, and there's probably a book about this, that it might have had some pressure on what led to the 2008 crisis. And so maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there was some stuff that went into that. But, you know, I was young enough at that time that I didn't necessarily have an appreciation for how the headlines actually end up on Main Street.
Sure.
But this one was also just so much more kind of heady economic material. It's like, we're raising interest rates. Like, cool. What does that mean? It's more expensive to buy a house, I guess. But other than that, what does it mean?
But then we found out.
Yeah. And really what it is that, like, we actually saw people pulling back on marketing budgets and on, and not just marketing budgets, but like buying less technology, you know, fewer pieces of office furniture, you know, decreasing
not
the size
doing
of
the, research and development.
Yeah, exactly. Like, decreasing the size of their office space, all sorts of things that, because capital wasn't so readily available from the banks and from the government, that you did start to have this shrinking effect. Mm-hmm. But unlike gas prices that affect everybody, it affected different sectors at different times. And so right. you didn't have that kind of giant, oh no moments that you had with the housing crisis. You had this kind of what I would call a rolling recession, or other people would probably call that. And so it impacted us in unexpected ways at unexpected times. Mm-hmm. And in some ways that sort of made it worse, you know? But if I had to go through the other option of being really sharp, recession.
Yeah.
All
I don't know
once.
Which I'd prefer.
I was gonna say might hate that too. So it's hard to say which one would be better, but the unpredictable nature of this one of, oh, now these people are struggling. Now this company's laying people off. Yeah. All that.
It just kind of seemed like hopping around, and some people seemed fine and others. And
yeah.
It was just,
yeah. Some people are having their best years ever, best right. quarter, immediately followed by their worst, or the other way around. Made this year very unsteady, unpredictable. And that was entirely unpleasant.
Yeah. Was my favorite.
Not happy that that happened, and certainly not happy to have not seen it coming.
Well, that gets us to 2024.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if you've made it this far, you're in for a treat. We have some fresh predictions around, what we think is going to happen in the areas of, you know, marketing and technology and everything in 2024. So, Raj, what's the first thing?
Yeah, so we're not going to make the same mistake twice. AI is definitely going to continue to be big this year. However, my prediction would probably be more accurately titled AI hype. Mm. People like Bill Gates have said this is the most major technological advancement they've seen since the creation of the internet. And I would probably tend to agree, but I also think that there are a lot of ways where we're still just getting to the power of the internet. For example, I need to go to the bank later today. And in most bank branches, most banks, I can't set an online appointment for, you know, going to sit down with a banker. I'm gonna have to walk into a lobby and say, excuse me, who do I talk to about
this?
Yeah,
it's very antiquated.
Yeah, very old school. And you know, that's the way it's been for a long time, and the internet hasn't really caught up. Like, online scheduling we do online scheduling all the time,
everything.
You know?
Yeah.
And for that matter, why can't I have a Zoom meeting? And, you know, why do I have to go into the actual bank to have this conversation?
Why do I have to go there in a horse and buggy? Like, that always gets me every time.
and so, like, that's what I think is going to happen with AI is that, you know, don't get me wrong. Absolutely. This is going to be a revolutionary technology. Google just released this thing called Project Gemini. Have you seen this?
I haven't.
Holy cow. They show this camera view of Gemini running. We'll link to it in the show notes. Yeah. It's crazy. It's Gemini running, and basically this guy's got this camera going, and
is it this movie that came out in 2022?
No.
Sci-fi thriller?
No. It's and there's a sticky note on the screen. And the guy draws a kind of a curve, and Gemini says, it looks like a curve. And then the guy adds, another curve to it, and then what appears to be a duck bill. And And then Google or Gemini says something to the effect of, it looks like a line curve, blah, blah. It doesn't get that it's a duck. The guy draws the feet on the bird, and then and then Google's like, oh, it's a duck. And then, or no, it says it's a bird. And then the guy draws water and goes, it's a bird in water. And it goes, oh, it's a duck. And so like it's learning, it's paying attention. It's more like the sci-fi AI that we kind of expect will happen.
Yeah.
And this stuff is going to grow in leaps and bounds. However, sitting here thinking, going, okay, how does this change my job though?
Well, I mean, I think Pictionary is going to be really interesting. or Telestrations, I think.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong. There are people right now, there's probably some 16-year-old kid right now who's going to make $1 billion somehow using either this technology or similar technology. Totally get that. However, for most people, it's probably not really going to change their everyday life. Now, check recognition in your app for your bank of being able to deposit checks might get slightly faster and, those types of things.
Yes.
But, one of the things that I want to talk about here is there's this book. I'm not going to say the full title. You'll know why. It's called BS Jobs. And it's,
you know what that stands for, kids.
Barbra Streisand Jobs. It's called BS Jobs. My friend Christian Burke introduced me to it. I have not read the book, but what he was telling me about it was that, this book talks about how with every technological revolution, people go, oh, this is the thing that's going to usher in the 3-day work week, the 4-day work week, and people are going to be so much more leisure and all that kind of stuff. Arthur C. Clarke was predicting this stuff. You see at the beginning of the Steve Jobs movie where he's like predicting about all the things, how much easier is life going to be? We can live wherever we want to,
right?
All of that. And it never happens, what does end up happening is that, you get middle management people who maybe used to have an assistant or a secretary, as it would have been called back in that day, and instead they're drowned in email and calendar notifications. And so it's like a lot of what this technology does is just increase burden on our attention. Mm. And, because it's like, okay, great. We've got ChatGPT on the world making a lot more writing. Cool. Does anybody have enough time to read anymore?
we're going to need AI to also be doing our reading for us. Then putting it into our brains while we sleep or something.
But at some point we're going to go, but what's the point? Because you and I are both trying to, I'm launching my book. My book comes out in March. Go ahead and buy it, please. Yeah. It'll be linked in the show notes.
Use ChatGPT to write that whole book, right?
Stop it. No, I absolutely did not. But it's hard enough to, it's so hard to sell a book because it's not because people aren't interested in me or supporting me or, I'm giving away all the royalties from the pre-order period to the grief support center for children that the book is based on. They're interested in supporting that. They're interested in supporting me. But the thing that most people aren't interested in is reading a book, a lot of people are like, is it out on audiobook yet? Which I appreciate. I'm listening to an audiobook right now. But also I think people are kind of waiting more for the movie if it ever happens.
Isn't that interesting? The Netflix series.
They'd be probably just as satisfied with a few TikTok videos to get you the point. Like, oh, that was a good series of 90-second videos. And so that's
our
kind
attention
of,
spans and our time.
That's so kind precious. Of the major question about AI right now is that how and when will it actually alleviate more problems than it creates? And again, there might be some things that are super helpful. That I've seen, we worked with Ben Cook at Sparrow, and he's amazing in the field of machine learning and machine vision. Those things are really cool because there are certain jobs that are like, count how many pigs are in that pen. And it's like, you can get a camera to do that. You don't need a person to do that. Mm-hmm. Now, the person whose job that's, interrupting might have certain feelings about that, but do they really love getting up every morning and going, trotting through pig dung and all that kind of stuff to count?
Yeah.
Or can they find a job that they enjoy more or better at? And so there are good things that are going to come from it, but at the same time, the benefit has to outweigh the cost to our attention, or else some of these technologies aren't really going to be their full potential. And I honestly think that that's realistically going to take at least 10 to 20 years.
Yeah, it's not going to be overnight in the same way. Yeah. Like these technologies are moving fast. There's no doubt. But I think, to see the full effect of them, I mean, very much like the internet revolution, that technology was moving fast with email and all that stuff when we were kids.
Yep.
But like to really like when... it didn't really fully take its like form until probably about a decade later that we felt like we're like living in this internet age.
Yeah, and what's going to happen with this, I think, is that in the meantime there's going to be this backlash against AI generated things that cause us to value things that are made by humans more.
I was just having this conversation with Nick, one of the designers who offices with us, and he's an amazing craftsman. He makes things out of wood. He's an incredible hand lettering artist and all this stuff, and I'm always so inspired by what he does. But I was just chatting with him about how I think the company he works for just put out an AI statement about like how their company can and can't use AI. And I thought it was really smart actually what they were saying. But I was like, already him and I were both agreeing that like we see so much AI generated artwork and AI generated things now that we're kind of getting like desensitized to it. I am like so much more like honed into things that I know are made by hand. When I see something carved out of wood on Instagram, I'm just more interested. Like, even though there's these real, obviously very beautiful and very like amazing things, as soon as I realize that it's AI, there's something that I don't know. It's something like in my soul or something in my, and I don't think it's just because I'm an artist. I think just because I'm a human, there's something that we connect with, something that a human made, even if the thing that the human made isn't as perfect or as, I'm just more interested in like, an actual human made that. It connects with me in a deeper place. And so I think kind of with all the fatigue we've talked about with social, with political, et cetera, I think there is going to be kind of like this fatigue with the hype of AI. And I think we're starting to feel it already.
Yeah. Now what it will replace is, bad stock photos, those types of things where we didn't really like it to start with. You have all the cheesy people pointing at a computer, kind of stuff that,
or we can make those even cheesier. Which, if you look closely, their fingers will have like 10 fingers on each hand.
Yeah. Some AI humor there would be fun. Yeah. But, our friend Dan Cumberland just sent out an email to his newsletter for the Meaning Movement. And he included several versions of, he'd apparently asked, one of the image generators to make a skull made out of Legos, like a human skull made out of Legos. And the artwork that came out of it was really interesting. And I don't begrudge his use of that at all, because it would have cost, probably at least $500 a piece for each of these illustrations. Right. And, and for an email, spending $1,500 to get three graphics, for that use case, didn't make sense for his business. No. Now there are businesses who'll pay much more. There's businesses who pay $50,000 or $100,000 for one email, because if it's written by somebody like Donald Miller and they know you're going to get $1 million in sales off of this, $100,000 email.
Yeah,
absolutely. It's worth it to have a pro like that sit down and write it for you.
Right.
And that's kind of the world that I think we live in, is that some of the stuff that can and should be automated, that just, let's add a little sprinkle of interest to this email with an AI generated image. Great. But, you're not going to want AI generated wedding photos or photos of your baby or anything like that.
And I even think like, or children's books or whatever. Yeah. Like, I do think it's disrupting and will continue to disrupt, certain fields. Like, I don't think it'll ever fully replace human art or illustration or whatever. But I do think it will challenge maybe the pricing of those things. Or, I think there will continue to be, places that will challenge, but I do think that it's not maybe, I don't see the full replacement in the same way. Yeah. And I think just because we're human, as long as we are human, we're going to respond to human things.
I'm more interested in things like, in the financial world, right? It'd be great if AI were looking at my bank account and said, hey, if you went to Starbucks one fewer times a month, then you would add over the course of 5 years, $100,000 to your 401k. you know, something like that. That's like actually helpful. And I think that we will start to see those things and maybe even sooner than later. Yeah. But like, that's where we're going to see more effect. I think, you know, the ChatGPT.
Robots are great at robot things. Like, you know,
Yeah, ChatGPT and DALL-E and all those things are really like fun to play with.
Yeah.
But overall, you know, it's I just don't think that the real value is going to be in those types of things. I think that the value is going to be much more in things like predictive analysis. And it'd be really cool if, you know, every time you get your blood drawn at your doctor, then it's like, hey, we've noticed, we've come through all the data that you have a, you know, because of the increase in your cholesterol or whatever, some marker, some vitamin even, you know, it's like you have a 15% increased risk of getting cancer. You should eat more potatoes, you know, or whatever. You know, it's just like, get that potassium in you. And like that kind of stuff is going to be really cool. And part of me is like, don't bother replacing creatives right now.
Yeah.
Because we like movies that are made by humans, you know?
Exactly. And I think, you know, not to belabor this point too long, but I do think that also, you know, when it comes to like agencies like ours, you know, I think, you know, I'm not super worried about, they're going to just start like cranking out, you know, logos and materials with AI, and they're going to do all their copywriting through AI. It's like, I think a lot of companies and individuals and, you know, business leaders, they love working with real people too. And they want a partner. They want a friend. They want someone to like, you know, challenge their ideas and use their experience. And yeah, they could sit in a corner and try that with a robot or whatever, but it's very lonely. And it's very, there's like a community aspect and a relational aspect that comes from working with an agency. And so I think there will always be those people, as long as there are people that love working with other people and love the collaboration that comes from it. And I think that those agencies will continue to use AI tools to refine their things or to push things further. And like, you know, I think that will always be there, but I'm not as afraid of it fully replacing what we do.
I'll tell you one area where I can anticipate using this is, you know, we do a lot of naming for companies. And one of the big things in naming a company is finding a good website domain that actually works with that name. And I was messing around with GoDaddy yesterday, and they have an AI domain search. And then you can say, hey, I you know, I'm looking to do this kind of website, and it will suggest website domains for you. Now, what I like about that is that, you know, my normal process is I come up with a whole huge list of names, and then I go through and one by one search them against what's available. It takes a long, long time. And then it's like, well, .com, .co, put a hyphen in the middle. You know, there's all these variants you have to do of it. AI enabling, it'd be great if I could just dump that whole list in and say, hey, search all of these for me. Tell me what's available.
Especially if it's taking in like stuff from around you, like, you know, what's relevant around you or what's oversaturated, like name wise.
Exactly. Like yep. Yeah. If I could upload a list, which I don't think is possibly or is possible currently, but maybe it is, I didn't try and then say, hey, search all of these names and then suggest a few more like it. Now we might be cooking. Cause there were a few that were interesting. I wouldn't have taken any of the thing that they suggested, but I like that they have the information of all the ones that are available. So instead of me guessing of like, you know, like just spitting in the wind, kind of just like, does this stick? Does this stick? Does this stick?
Right.
Instead saying, you know, what's going to stick. Here's what I'm looking for. Can you find something similar to it?
Exactly.
That I like.
Love that. Yeah. I love that. All right. We got to keep going. What about politics?
Yeah. So this year's going to be interesting. I think that's probably the only thing that we can really predict with any accuracy is that, you know, between the trials that are going on and, you know, the age of the candidates involved and all those things, it's going to be weird.
Yeah.
And
it's not going to be the same that it was 8 years ago or 4 years ago. Like, I think people are, you know, we've all changed. You know, our tolerance for a lot of things, I think, has changed. It'll be really interesting to see.
Yeah. And, you know, to think about that, one of the major factors in Trump's election in 2016 was how much free media coverage he got.
Right.
And I don't know about you, but I can't even tell you the last time I sat down and watched an entire news program on television.
Oh, yeah, no.
Even clips of
news television. I don't even know how to. Like, that's how bad it is.
I mean, your house, I mean, legitimately probably can't.
We don't, we don't have television, like hooked up.
You'd,
like,
you'd have to pay for YouTube TV or something like that to actually get it.
I get all my news from YouTube, like, shorts. So, I mean, that tells you something about me, I guess.
And something we were talking about before the before we started recording here was that, you know, him getting deplatformed for several years on Facebook and Twitter.
He has his own platform now, Raj, and it's very relevant.
I think that, I mean, but this is interesting, right? Is that mainstream media was effective for a reason back in the day because it was like you have three channels and that's it. And what you get, and then cable became relevant and whatever. Right. But now we're going back out to this really fractured thing where you're like, yeah, he's got an echo chamber that he can announce to, but it's not like, you know, people who are undecided are signing up for